Hello, and welcome to episode 238 of The Ethical Life, a weekly podcast that explores the intersection of ethics and modern life. I'm Scott Rada, a digital strategist with Lee Enterprises, and as always, I'm joined by Rick Kite, who is head of the Ethics Institute at the Turbo University in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Scott.
Every year, several organizations choose a word of the year, which is meant to capture the spirit of the moment. In 2025, some of those choices included words like slop, parasocial, and rage bait. Those words may say something about our culture, but they're also very tied to the moment. Rick, you've been thinking about a much older word, one that points to something deeper and more enduring. That word is devotion. It's a word tied to vows and sacrifice and dedication, and it raises a simple but uncomfortable question: to what or whom am I actually devoted? As I thought about that question, another word came to mind to me, and that word is loyalty. Those two words seem related, but the more I thought about it, they may not mean the same thing. To me, devotion often feels more emotional, something rooted in belief or love, and loyalty can look more like behavior, something we keep even when the feeling fades. Rick, what does it mean to say someone is devoted to something, and do you think devotion itself is a virtue, or does it depend entirely on what we devote ourselves to?
Well, let me start by your distinction you opened with between devotion and loyalty. And I think you're capturing something important there. It's like devotion does seem to be more inward looking and loyalty more outward looking. And I think we could even say that loyalty is something like the outward expression of an inner devotion, because they're distinct, but they're very closely related. And then when it comes to, like, is devotion a virtue? Like, that's loyalty, we can absolutely say, like, it depends what you're loyal to, whether loyalty is a good thing. Because, you know, like, we're loyal Nazis. Were they acting virtuously? And I think we'd want to say no, they weren't. They were loyal to a bad cause. But devotion, I'm tempted to say the same thing about it, but there's kind of a qualification. Like, I don't think you can truly say you're devoted to something trivial. I think to be devoted to something or someone means it's greater than yourself and in some way. And so there is an element to it. Like, we want to say, like, devotion in and of itself is a virtue because it means you're committed to something greater than yourself.
I think I could make the case that devotion has a strong emotional connection to it, whereas loyalty might just be a really strong habit sometimes. And do you buy that there's, I guess maybe so, because you said that loyalty is sort of this more inward-facing thing. And I think also that it's pretty easy to be devoted to something that is something you care about deeply, but really doesn't involve anyone else. It seems like loyalty, that's a little trickier to do that.
Yeah, loyalty, it's usually an expression of obedience to something larger, something communal or societal. So, for example, we have loyalty oaths, and you can say the oath and express loyalty in the sense that you're claiming an obedience to something, to a set of values or to a nation, to an organization. You can express that loyalty verbally, which is an external expression, right? Whether you feel devotion to that group or to that cause, that's another thing altogether. They're closely related, but the loyalty is not necessarily indicative of the devotion. So I think you're right about that.
And also, it would seem, I can think of examples too, where you may come across something or someone who you feel extremely devoted to, and that sometimes can fade over time, but you may still be loyal to that person. It seems like devotion maybe maybe and I don't want to spend too much time on the distinction here, but maybe requires a little deeper well of caring and tending to that, because I think if you sometimes don't do that, it just sort of no longer is a top of mind emotion.
Yeah, and one of the indications of that is that we can ask somebody a question like how devoted are you to a cause, for example, like how much are you willing to sacrifice, how far are you willing to go, whereas with loyalty we tend to say you're either loyal or you're not. It's a matter, it's a yes or no answer. But devotion is a matter of degree, because it involves this kind of attitude like that we have towards somebody or something.
It seems like the word loyalty, one of the places it shows up most often are the people around President Donald Trump. That in his first term, he had, especially when I think of some key advisors and members of the cabinet, were people who quietly or sometimes not so quietly would question Trump's decisions, question some of the tactics that were coming out of the White House. And they would say some of those things while in their public position and certainly afterward. And I think that would bother anyone, but that probably bothered him more than most people. And now that we're in Trump 2.0, you hear all the time about when he was deciding to fill his cabinet and pick close advisors, he cared most of all about loyalty. And I can understand the instinct on that, I guess, because he got burned by some people in pretty important positions in his first term. But I think that also, whether it's loyalty or even a deeper devotion to President Trump, I think there are times that is sort of a danger, that if you just surround yourself with people who are loyal to you, or you're all loyal to a certain cause, it sort of tamps down any other views and kind of gives you tunnel vision. And especially when you're a really powerful person like the president, people are kind of hesitant to tell you no.
Yes, and this is one of the dangers of loyalty and where it gets separated from devotion, is if you begin to care more about the loyalty than, say, the internal attitude that it's an expression of, the outward observances are all that you care about. And so whether somebody talks to the press or not, that becomes the test of loyalty, not whether one really cares about the cause. Usually they go together, but there are times where they come apart.
And also, as I was sort of thinking about this topic, it does seem that, and I'll step outside of the White House because most people aren't working in the White House, or most people listening to this podcast are likely not the president, but like most people have jobs. And I think that is a place where loyalty and devotion come into play. And it seems like, to me at least, loyalty and devotion sort of both have to be earned a little bit over time, especially when you're entering a new job or any type of new relationship, I guess. It is tough to get that feeling right away. And it also has to be a bit reciprocal, right? Especially if you're dealing with other people or another organization, that it's difficult, I would think, to be loyal to someone or devoted to someone or something and not feel like you're getting something in return.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't think it's primarily whether you're getting something in return. I think it's whether you believe in the goodness or the integrity of what you're committed to. And loyalty often precedes devotion in the sense that you can be loyal to somebody, let's say an institution, like say the place where I work, my loyalty to the university where I teach, that would be a manner of like how I talk about the organization, whether I like criticize it publicly, whether I act contrary to certain values that we espouse at the university, but I don't follow them. So I can act in such a way that can be seen as either loyal or disloyal, and I can do that prior to having a genuine devotion. But at a certain point, I either have this attitude towards my own institution that it's something I really care about. Say, I believe in its mission. I believe it should be furthered, and I should make certain sacrifices for the sake of it, which I happen to believe, by the way. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't come automatically. You're right. That takes time to develop. And just in the same way in relationships, like this is one of the things when we make marriage vows, for example, we are pledging ourselves to certain kinds of behaviors, but we're also pledging ourselves to an emotional commitment. At the time you make the pledge, you may not have yet, but you're promising that you are going to invest in that emotional commitment.
Okay. For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. That's a matter of devotion, right? The loyalty is like being faithful to somebody, where we talk like I'm pledging that I'm not going to pursue other partners, for example, while I'm in this relationship. That's a matter of loyalty. But the devotion is like, also, how do I genuinely feel about this? And that is something I think that develops over time and can be a matter of more or less.
It, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, I think when I think of loyalty and others, and when we read about in the news, we may think of the current administration. When I hear the word devotion, however, my mind, and I think other people's too, quickly goes to religion. And maybe because, you know, we have devotions is like a thing Christians do.
Yeah, and devotionals.
Devotionals, right. Yeah, exactly. And that there is some reverence, obviously, there. And I think there is some, I'm using religion generally, and I guess I can drill down to Christianity, although that can vary a lot from place to place. But there also are times where religions ask for sacrifice of the people, of the faithful who attend. And I guess it is sort of up to the individual to come to the decision whether a particular belief, a particular institution is worthy of devotion. And that can be, I would think, should not be something people take lightly.
No, not at all. I think like devotion is something that's quite serious, because what it means is I'm making a vow to commit my life to somebody or to something, right? And that's a very serious matter, because, you know, like, well, when you're committing your life, you are claiming that you're willing to give something up, you're willing to sacrifice. That's something I don't do for the sake of my interests. Like, I'm not going to sacrifice myself for my house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I care a great deal about my house. In fact, I've been paying for it for 25 years.
And if you got a call that it was on fire right now, you'd probably pack up and leave.
Yeah, I'd be very upset. But I'm not going to give my life for my house,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's entirely different for my wife, my children. You know, I'm devoted to them in a way I can't be to my house. And then, so this is what religion demands. And I think some religions demand devotion, say, to certain people within the religious order or to the institution itself. I'm Protestant, and I think it's pretty clear in the Protestant tradition, at least, it's devotion to God, and that's the only one to whom we should be devoted. There's matters of loyalty that are institutional loyalty and so forth, but devotion is reserved to God. So when I pray, I pray to God. When I pledge my life, that's who I'm pledging to, and so there is a kind of hierarchy of devotion, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and it seems to me, and I think you'll agree, that for much of our recent history, people seemed to be more eager to show loyalty to institutions, whether it was their employer, their churches, civic organizations, even the communities where they live. And as our institutions get weaker in this country, is probably not a surprise that two things are true. We focus more on individualism, and that's not entirely bad, but also that comes at the cost of, in many cases, devotion, because, I mean, I guess in some ways we're all devoted to ourselves, but that's like not where the devotion should stop.
Yeah. So when you say individualism isn't entirely bad, one of the reasons it's not entirely bad is because it it promotes a certain kind of equality, and it makes sure that the institutions don't become corrupt, because there always has to be an attention to the interests of the individuals and all the various individuals. And yet, like, a thoroughgoing individualism is quite unhealthy for society, and it's fact unhealthy for the individuals as well, because our lives only attain meaning when we're attached to something greater. Like, as an individual, I have to get my meaning somewhere, and it's not from investment in myself. Like, I can't get meaning for myself from myself, put it that way.
Or for the pursuit of wealth and material success.
Yeah, if I'm concerned just about self advancement, what that results is a continual diminishment of the self in an odd way. Like, to really grow, for myself to get larger and more substantial, I have to commit myself to something outside of the self. So this is what, like, is very important in societies, that we be committed to something outside the self. And when we're committed together to something outside and to something worthwhile, then you have a very healthy society. Now, the question is, well, to what are we all committed? And is it really worthwhile? I mean, that's a very important matter. And it's something like we ought to be continually discussing.
And it sounds like you agree, though, that, you know, compared to 50, even 75 years ago, that these institutions that people felt great commitments to, whether they were civic, whether they were religious, those connections have really kind of severed in many cases over the past decades. And I think some of the reason for that, though, is because some of those groups or organizations were not quite what we thought they were, that they were not the missions, the strong and correct missions that we thought they had. We did some more investigating, and these institutions were not these pure altruistic things. And I think that in some ways, that is it fair to say that with the pendulum right now is swung so far that we've abandoned so many of these institutions. But I think if you were going back many decades ago, it was swung so far the other way that we just sort of had unfettered trust in these institutions. Does that make sense?
We really saw that nationally. And if we look at our history since World War II, there's a real incredible, like, faith in our institutions and in the United States as a nation immediately following World War II. And I think for good reasons, but we saw this really explosive growth in all kinds of things, like churches and service organizations, organizations like Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. They were all growing really rapidly because people believed in their communities, believed in one another, believed in our nation and the goodness of our nation and its ultimate cause, and thought that these were ways of contributing to this common good. And then we get the civil rights movement, which really, like, showed to everybody on television kind of this really inhumane treatment of other citizens. We get Watergate, which is, like, really a devastating kind of political scandal, where we saw, like, our top officials just outright lying to the American people and doing things that what we thought were like characteristic of criminal gangs, but not the people that we vote into office. And then the Vietnam War, which was really devastating on many levels. And cause us to, like, distrust the military, but also our politics. And so you get those three things combined in a very short period of time. And there is a real turn towards individualism after that, and a kind of cynicism to anybody that's claiming that you should sacrifice yourself to common good, because the question is, like, is it really good? Like, are we all being duped? Maybe we should pay more attention to our own self-interest.
Well, and you mentioned that
was sort of the post-war, you kind of get a quick history lesson in post-war America. I want to go back, though, to the World War II era, which, I, of course, neither of us were around for. But, you know, you read stories about how Americans were asked to sacrifice, you know, in some small and some medium ways to help the war effort over in Europe and across the Pacific. And my understanding of that is a lot of that was because they needed some of those supplies or materials to be redirected toward the war effort. But I also have read and that some of that was just a way to kind of get all Americans involved in the war effort as well, and to make them feel like they were playing a part, even though they weren't, you know, storming the beaches of Normandy, that you could be some 65-year-old in rural Kentucky and still, because of rationing or other ways, contributing in ways you could. And I think that that worked at that time, and those sacrifices led to that sort of good feeling we had right after the war and saw a tremendous economic expansion. But I just wonder, like, if we as a country and as a world found ourselves in such a dire situation again, that if Americans or maybe other countrymen across the world would have that same ability to sacrifice for something else. I mean, right now, and again, I don't want to even for a minute compare World War II to the conflict that the U.S. is embroiled in at the moment with Iran. But, and again, many people have many different opinions about whether this incursion is worth it and whether the lives lost and the money spent is going to pay off. But right now, the most visible concern people have is an escalation in gas prices, and people don't seem to like that. And again, maybe that's fine, and maybe that will push an end to this conflict more quickly, and maybe that's all in all a good thing. I just worry that Americans aren't willing to sacrifice like they were during World War II, and maybe it's because of all the things you said about how we've become a more cynical nation. But is that loss of loyalty and devotion to our country and to a greater good just a bad thing? And I guess, too, second question would be, do you need to have sacrifice if you have devotion?
Yeah, you have to have sacrifice if you have devotion. I mean, that's what it is. If you're not willing to sacrifice, it's not genuine devotion. It's just advancement of interests. And if we look at what's going on right now, our administration isn't asking for devotion to a cause. At least as I've been hearing the various rationales, and we've heard a number of different rationales.
Yeah, like seven or eight, if you count,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, but like a commitment to a real higher cause, like the furtherance of democracy in the world, for example. That's just not in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like there has been some overtures about like overthrowing like the Khomeini regime, that sort of thing.
Who was doing like bad things?
Who was doing some bad things?
Yeah,
yeah. But that's more like they should do it for the sake of their own interest, and that would also help ours. I mean, like the appeal is overwhelmingly to our interests, and that's not an appeal to devotion, and so.
But like fighting the Nazis was a way to do that.
Well, yeah, because like, and I think there was a real sense that what the Nazis were doing was an evil, like it was objectively wrong what they were doing by invading and oppressing other countries even before we knew about the murder of millions of Jews in the death camps. I mean, there was already a sense that what they were doing was objectively wrong, and that our allegiance, our loyalty, was required to put an end to that. That is something that can call forth devotion to a cause. We need to protect ourselves from further attacks that are maybe hypothetical in a variety of ways, or we need to ensure that oil prices stay low for the future. I'm not sure that that's going to appeal to the same kind of devotion to a cause or to a country. And I think, frankly, I think our politicians are really reluctant right now to appeal to emotions like devotion. I'm not sure if we're in a state, in a position to give that. I think some might be, but overwhelmingly, I don't think that is something that works politically anymore, and I don't think it has. It worked for a while right after 9/11. But
what we were asked to do in this country, for them, again, we did have send people overseas and put people's lives at risk in a war in Afghanistan. I don't want to minimize that, but like when asked what we could do in our own communities, the answer, I think, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think I'm oversimplifying it, but then President George W. Bush said, oh, just get out and juice up the economy again.
Well, I mean, yeah, he said something about going shopping.
Yeah.
But I think a lot, you know, Bush's critics made a lot of that. But it was just one remark. I mean, overwhelmingly, there was this feeling of love for our country and how we had been attacked. And and we needed to protect not just ourselves and our interests. We needed to protect our country mm-hmm. from terrorism.
Yeah, yeah. And there was like a real fear then that like the next day or the next week or the next month, we may have some other cataclysmic event. And well, thankfully we haven't, and that's good. But yeah. Like there was a true worry at that juncture that, you know, what's next?
But I think it became fairly clear. We didn't see this right away, or not everybody saw it right away, but we look in hindsight, then that response from us was used to advance other kinds of political interests.
Yes.
So once again, we found ourselves like being duped the way I think a lot of people thought we were duped with the Korean, or the, not the Korean
Vietnam.
War, but the Vietnam War. And like this kind of irony, this sense like in cynicism that prevails, I think precludes devotion. It really gets in the way of us. But I still think devotion is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's harder to tap into, it seems.
Yeah, and you can't be devoted to somebody that you don't trust.
Well, and you mentioned 9/11, and that's in most of our memories. But even more recently, and we're now, as we record this, like literally 6 years to the day or so, when COVID was just blowing up all over the world. And unlike wars, I mean, I know there's some conspiracy theorists out there, but I sincerely believe that how COVID began, I mean, maybe we can debate, but like, I don't think it was like an intentional thing. And so like this happened and it's bad and it's nobody's fault. And as a world, we need to react to this new thing in serious ways. And you can't just blame someone. We have to, you know, figure out solutions. And even that quickly, over a matter of months, pulled people apart in what was a serious moment for the entire world. And I guess that, to me, is just another example of how we are, just as a society today, so reticent to be involved in a cause greater than ourselves.
And that's regrettable. I'm very devoted to this country. Like when I say the Pledge of Allegiance, I say it proudly. And I've, you know, I've had to go in various organizations I've been part of that have wanted to diminish the Pledge of Allegiance or not include it because of like partisan bickering about it and so forth. I thought that was absolutely wrong. As Americans, we should be devoted to our country, but that implies a willingness to sacrifice for it, but for sacrifice for the sake of making it better. We ought to do the things that we can do together to make our country better for all of us. I'm also at the same time very skeptical. I mean, I think like just about every administration that I've seen during my lifetime, I haven't been devoted to any of the presidents that we've had for a long time. But I don't think I have to be devoted to a president to be devoted to the country, right? Because in a democratic republic, I think the the presidents are elected to serve the people, and like they're not an object of devotion. The presidents are servants of the people.
And they'll come and go.
Yeah, and they're accountable to us, you know, and so that is like, so it's a different kind of attitude. And it's one of the things I really like about the hyperpartisanship that we're living in today. I think the hyperpartisanship attaches a kind of veneration to the parties and to the representatives of the parties that is unhealthy for our nation. And I think gets in the way of proper devotion.
As we close, I just want to step away from politics for just a minute. But you touched on something that I think is an important piece that I don't want to lose, is that devotion, it sounds like you're saying, can often require communities to endure. And I think there are times where you can be deeply devoted to something personally and introspectively. But I think in most cases, communities can strengthen that devotion. They can also direct it in positive, good ways. And we can also probably think of examples where communities can sort of leverage that devotion into bad ways. But I'm guessing you feel pretty strongly that these personal connections and communities we build, when done properly, can strengthen whether we call it devotion or loyalty or something greater than ourselves.
Do you remember the Branch Davidians and the David Koresh cult? You know,
outside of Waco, Texas.
I visited that compound about 25 years ago. This was so a number of years after it had been.
So I think it was the late 90s is when.
I think
it was during
right.
the Clinton administration.
During the, yeah. And all kinds of children were killed, unlike many people, but also a lot of children. And there was a raid by, I think it was ATF and the FBI, that raided the compound, and it started on fire. There was a big firefight that started on fire, and a lot of children were killed in it. There's no question there was, like within that cult, there was extreme devotion to David Koresh. He was the cult leader. And that's almost one, like one of the definitions of a cult, is that you develop this extreme devotion by a population to a charismatic leader, charismatic figure. And it was all misplaced because he was an abusive figure who was actually harming many of the people that he was pledging to protect. And we see evidence of devotion that goes horribly wrong when people are devoted to somebody who's deceiving them or somebody who's using them and takes advantage of that. So devotion isn't something to be taken lightly. But when we are properly devoted to that which is actually good. And I think there is a distinction to be made here. There is that which is objectively good. And it is something that is worth trying to figure out and then devoting our lives to that. I mean, because the alternative is that we devote ourselves to nothing. And that becomes a kind of a sorry life, a life where we don't genuinely feel useful or that we belong to anybody or to anything. So figuring out what is the proper object of devotion, I think this is a life's work.
We end each show by tackling an ethical dilemma. And Rick, here is my question for you. I recently read a thread on Reddit about a local repair shop in the city where we both live. And this is a shop that a lot of people seem to love. In the discussion on Reddit, a number of commenters said they think the owner is struggling because, among other things, he refuses to pass along rising costs to his loyal customers. According to people who know the owner, he doesn't want to raise prices and risk burdening the very people who have supported his business for many years. Commenters admired that attitude, and their proposed solution wasn't to encourage the small business owner to raise prices. Instead, they said loyal customers should simply go to his shop and deliberately overpay their bills to help the small business owner stay afloat. So that led me to think about this. Is it the customer's role to quietly subsidize a struggling small business out of goodwill? Or does a business owner have a responsibility to set prices that are sustainable and fair for both the business and the people who rely on it?
So I don't know where responsibility lies in this, but I would say, like, it's not going to work to say we need to overpay our bill, because then what you do, like, you're putting even the owner of the business in an awkward situation.
Like, he's going to give you change and you're like, no, keep the extra $15.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and a few people are going to do this. That's not going to save the business.
Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah, the number of people who saw this Reddit threat might be in the dozens.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of a dumb suggestion. But I do think there, like it's good business practice to try to figure out, like, how do I make this business sustainable long-term? And that has to be passing on those rising costs. Now, there might be various ways of keeping the costs low. And there's always the option of, say, letting your customers know that you are doing free work for those who can't afford to pay, or like, and if you have these loyal customers, you figure out over time which ones can really afford it and which ones aren't, and you can charge less to certain customers if you want. You would have that discretion.
Yeah, plus one thing, if you're like a single proprietor, nobody's gonna come and say no, you can't charge. You can kind of, you have full autonomy to do what you want to do.
Yeah. And so, like, but that's up to the business owner. So yeah. He has to figure that out if he's going to keep that going. And he also has to realize, like if the business does not stay afloat, if he cannot stay in business, then all these people that he's helping out by providing this service, I'm guessing, or whatever it is, they don't have that option anymore to come to him for that. And so I think it's kind of a misplaced kind of obligation to say, I cannot pass on any of my rising costs. I think you just have to, if it's a matter of keeping the business afloat or not.
And one thing I left out, I guess, and again, I'm just going off what the people in this Reddit subreddit said. So, I mean, who knows if it's right, but some people made the point that it's not that he's not busy. In fact, these people claim he regularly works 9, 10, 11-hour days because he has so much work coming in. But in many cases, in most cases, the what he's charging does not compensate for the time he's putting in and the supplies and all that. So it's not like he's sitting around hoping for two people to walk through the door a day. It's just the opposite. And then, so this one person, I try not to jump in on these things very often, but one person's like, well, you know, the lesson learned here, and this was sort of like after everybody shared their stories, the lesson learned here is that we need to encourage our young people who aren't going into the trades as much, and that's certainly true, to like learn a trade like this because clearly it's in demand. And like my response was, yeah, but like, how are you going to convince someone that go into a trade where you're going to work like ridiculously long hours, according to people on the thread? This guy hasn't taken a vacation in years, so that's something you'll have to figure out. And oh, by the way, you're not going to make much money, and it's going to be like not a lot of and a lot of work, and you're never going to get time off. But this is something you should go into. Is like a really bad idea to like encourage people to go into. And people are like, well, you don't understand. Well, no, I mean, I just don't think he's like. If you want future generations to like say, hey, this is something I'd like to do, you have to make it look like something they'd like to do. I mean, like, for example, being a plumber is not the most glamorous job in America, but I think we all know that plumbers like make a decent living. And like, that's good. I think they should. I mean, that's an important thing. We need plumbers. We probably need a lot more plumbers than we have. And that probably means we'll start having to pay plumbers more. And I think that's like fine. And that's a way you get people interested in a profession. It's not out of this sort of emotional appeal that, oh, this is just kind of a quaint old thing and we need people to do this. I want to say one more thing and I'll get your opinion, but it reminds me of a very different business in our community that's been closed now for a couple of years. There was, and I didn't know these people, I just sort of watched their social media presence during their rise and eventual fall, but they opened a small cafe in our community. And shortly after opening, it seemed like for the year or so they were open, their entire appeal to customers was, nobody really knows us, and being a small business owner is tough, and like we're trying to make a go of this, and we're struggling, and please come in and support us because we're good people, and we're trying to start a small business, and we're struggling, and we're good people. I mean, it was just like this circle. I mean, like, no, I'm going to go there if like you're offering a product I want or need or hear good things about. And I think there's a part of our society in the small business world that uses this kind of emotional manipulation to come in and do business with you. I think that you just need to like find a business model that works and hopefully make money. And obviously many small businesses fail, but to like in leverage your entire argument on small business people are good, honest, hardworking people, support them is not enough for me at least.
So when I was in high school, my dad who had a paint store in our small town that I'd work at in the summers and after school. And then there was my dad and then the baker, who the bakery was right across the street from us. They decided to go together and buy a cafe, which had gone out of business. Nobody had stepped up, and it was the only cafe in town. And they thought, we really need a cafe in our town. And so they thought, like, this would be good. We could keep it going because the baker knows something about that kind of business. My dad, I mean, that's what he did. He did a lot of home renovation business and stuff like that. And so he could do a lot of the work that needed to be done to remodel the place. And so they buy the business. It wasn't all that much. But then they had this friend. There was a friend of the baker who was out of work and needed a job. He had been a Navy cook, and he really wanted to be the chef in the kitchen. So they hired him. He was a terrible cook. And they put out this new menu, and then the prices were higher than had been under the old cafe. Well, the old cafe had been there for 40 years.
But it also had failed.
Well, like she had retired.
Okay.
She'd gotten old.
So was it because their prices were too low and they just couldn't make it?
No, but like she, the business had long been paid for, so she could afford to have really low prices and everything. But they were much lower than any of the neighboring towns. But that's what people were used to seeing. So they come in, so the prices are higher. They still weren't that high. They had gone and looked at neighboring cafes around in other towns and priced it about the same. But the food was bad.
Yeah,
and people complained about the high prices. Now, what they're really complaining about is you raise the prices and the food's not as good, right? I think they were in business for 6 months, maybe a year, and they've eventually had to close, end up selling it, and they lost a lot of money on the deal. But it was just bad business. And I remember going home at night and my dad complaining about people that, you know, people are complaining about the prices and they don't realize how important it is to have a cafe in our town. You know, he was complaining about the customers, and he shouldn't have been. He should have been looking at like, what can we do to make it better? And it was a way of deflecting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The higher prices would have been fine if the food was much better. And that's something they just didn't get. And I think it's because like they didn't want to face firing a friend.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something else going on.
Especially in a small town.
Yeah. And so the same thing going on, like in this business that we're talking about that you brought up, is you provide really good service. There's various ways in which you can make good business. You may or may not be able to stay in business, but probably passing on, if you have customers willing to pay the higher prices, you have to pass that on. In order to stay in business and to keep helping, if you think you're helping people out, that's the only way to do it.
So I want to kind of tread carefully on this last topic, but I think it's related. For anybody listening here in our community, you probably know what I'm talking about. So I'm trying not to be too harsh of a critic on this, but there is a very long-term business in our city's downtown retail business that announced that it was closing after many, many years and was looking for a new owner. And everybody was worried that no new owner would come along. And lo and behold, some new owner expressed interest, purchased this business, and plans to do some, you know, tweaking or adjusting to the business model, but plans to reopen it here sometime this spring is what I've been told. And everybody's happy. Everybody's so happy that this longtime business is not closing. It's just being reimagined with someone new. And again, I don't think anybody thinks that's a bad thing. What I found interesting is that there is a GoFundMe campaign that is now in place to kind of jumpstart this business and try and get them off on their on the right foot. And obviously, starting any business, especially a retail business, in need some capital to get inventory and all the things you know when you start a retail store. But I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who is, you know, familiar with the business, but not familiar with any of the people running it. And her position was that she thought it kind of left a bad taste in her mouth because she's so used to seeing, like, and she mentioned a family member who had a horrible medical, traumatic medical issue, and that the family spun up a GoFundMe account to help pay for his long road to recovery. And in her mind, that's like what that's for, is sort of these people, you know, in a place that are facing some huge, huge personal challenges, and not so much for a person who's an entrepreneur who's trying to start a business and frankly, hopefully makes money doing it. And I guess, are you concerned about sort of this approach that this, and I've seen with this with other small businesses take of sort of asking for community support, not in a traditional way, like, hey, we'll invest and like give you a piece of the business or give you a 1% share. It's just like, hey, it's a good thing to support small businesses because like small businesses are good.
Well, there's that old joke, you know, where somebody says, I'd like to ask you for some money. And the response is, well, you can always ask, right?
Yeah.
You can always, there's nothing wrong with asking. Yeah. And it, you know, if people don't want to fund it, if they think that's inappropriate, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think your friend who objected to this, saying this is really for like these serious medical cases or other things.
And
like,
she would also say it hurts like the local United Ways or the local charities who are trying to raise money for.
Ridiculous, because there's not, it's not as if there's a certain amount of money available. And if you, like, people give to different causes. And when there's a variety of worthwhile causes and you have a community that is invested in the variety of worthwhile causes, what happens is those communities give even more. It's not that there's a set amount, say 10%.
Yeah.
And once you reach that 10%, there's just no more to go around. It's when you're talking about something like a well-loved business in a downtown that has become part of the community identity over the years, right? There's two things that might make you want to see that stay in business. One is, well, I shop there all the time and I got a good deal or really convenient or something, but I got what I was going to shop for and I hope it's still there so I don't have to go somewhere
else. I'll continue to support it as often as I can.
Right. The other is just wanting to see, I hope the institution is still there. It's healthy for our downtown. It makes the other businesses prosper. There's something about that. And these are two different kinds of contributions a small business might make. When you're giving to the GoFundMe, what you're doing is you're saying, I want that institution to stay there. I think it's important for our community, for the vibrancy of our downtown, for that sort of thing. And if people want to contribute to that, good for them. And it doesn't mean that if I contribute to this, I can't contribute to something else. And so I think that's just fine. But that's separate from, does it continue then to provide value from the individual purchases?
Especially once they reopen.
They reopen. And they're going to have to continue to do that. And if they don't do that, they can't keep going back to the GoFundMe.
For 5, 10 years. Yeah, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
As a reminder, the Ethical Life podcast is a production of Lee Enterprises. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And also, be sure to check out Rick's column, which covers many of the topics we talked about today around devotion. And everybody really should be devoted to reading Rick Kite's column. And that can be found on all Lee websites. For Rick Kite, I am Scott Rada. Thank you for listening.